The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Cynthia Niverku is with me. She's a Fianna Fáil candidate for the European elections. Niamh Harrigan as well. She's a Labour candidate. And Michael McNamara, an independent candidate for the same elections. You're all very, very welcome to the studio. Thanks a million for joining us. Cynthia, why do you want to be an MEP?
I have been helping people with problems for the last 27 years. And I have a passion for solving problems, and I want to bring that skill to a larger platform and a larger stage, and that's what the European Parliament would afford me if the voters voted for me.
What issues in particular do you want to solve? What problems do you want to solve in Europe that you can't solve here?
My priorities are investment in rural Ireland, protection of children against the internet giants, because at the moment their childhood is being robbed because the internet giants are not policed enough. I want to protect women from all forms of violence through that very important EU directive that just came on stream in recent months. And I particularly want a just transition for all farming families and communities in Ireland South.
Michael McNamara, you're coming from a place where you are a TD, so you can affect change at the moment. So why Europe rather than Dáil Éireann?
Well, I think more and more of the decisions that affect our lives are being made at a European level. For example, there's a very big debate in the Dáil about the nature restoration law, and there's an ongoing debate about the merits or otherwise of it. Yet that decision will be made in Europe. I mean, it's already been voted through the Parliament. Obviously, immigration is a big issue in Ireland now. We had an opt-out when we voted for the Lisbon Treaty and Protocol 21. The government have decided that they are going to at least put the question to the Dáil to get rid of that opt-out, essentially, so that's one more area that will essentially be determined in Europe. Obviously, Ireland's response to Israel and how Israel is responding to the threat posted by Hamas is a big issue in the Dáil. But realistically, Europe's policy, I mean, trade policy is a European competence that's being determined in Europe. I, along with my independent colleagues, wrote to the Trade Commissioner saying that the human rights provisions in the Israel Trade Association Agreement should be invoked. Got a very watery response. Obtained legal advice to the effect that it can't be challenged. So, you know, these are just examples of the decisions that are being made in Europe. Obviously, data is an increasingly important issue across the world. You know, Google maybe knows more about you than your partner. What they do with that data is hugely important. That's regulated at Europe. It's also, of course, very important to our economy because of all the tech giants that are based here. So many of these decisions are being made in Europe that I would like to participate in that. Also, the legislative process in Europe, there isn't a government in opposition, so that there's a greater possibility to actually influence legislation in Europe. You can point out all the flaws you like with legislation in Dublin, but once the whips go on, no matter how flawed the legislation is, it'll be voted through. I mean, I think the hate speech bill is an example of that, where almost everybody voted for it, and then everybody's expressing reservations about the flaws that are in it, having voted for it.
Niamh, what would you like to do if elected to European Parliament in Brussels?
So I suppose the reason I'm running is that, as a sociologist for the last 25 years, the big kind of traversal theme in all my work has been inequality and looking at inequality. And I think it's fair to say that particularly since the banking crisis, the EU has actually been quite a significant driver of inequality, and there's a lot that could be done to address that. One of the reasons that I'm running is that Labour is part of the Socialists and Democrats in the European Parliament. They're the second biggest group in the European Parliament. In that sense, European Parliament is like the Dáil in the sense that groups matter and belonging to groups matter, and big groups tend to have more influence. And right now, we have no voice in that second biggest group in the European Parliament. So that's a significant incentive for me to run. I suppose in terms of campaign priorities, one of the key things for me is to look at housing. People say, well, what does Europe have to do about housing? But actually, Europe is, one could argue, a significant part of the problem when it comes to our housing crisis. We've seen it recently with the debate around why is the state leasing houses rather than buying houses? And a lot of that originates back with EU fiscal policy and essentially the state trying to do a dance around EU fiscal policy. If we look at the origins of the cap in the 50s and 60s, I mean, the EU decided that they should set up the cap to protect food security because food was a basic need. Housing is a basic need. And the EU have done nothing in the last 10 years when speculators have run riot with European housing stocks. So that's my first priority. The second one is a just transition. And that's really looking at fairness within climate policy. We've seen it just this month, Kieran, with the carbon taxes, which were introduced at the beginning of the month. This €20 on a fill of home heating oil, 15 cents on a litre of petrol. The jet aviation industry, which is massively profitable, uses a form of fuel that's almost exactly the same as home heating oil, is entirely exempt from carbon taxes. And it's those kind of injustices that are creating the pushback to climate policy. And that's one thing I want to address. The final thing I want to fight for really is protecting Irish neutrality in the context of the kind of slippage that we've seen in the last year, particularly around Ursula von der Leyen's stance on Gaza. I think it's inevitable that we are going to see an increasing move to kind of common European security and defence policies. I think it's possible for Ireland to do that, but within a neutrality, but a neutrality that has to be credible. Yeah. And I don't think our credibility, we have a credible neutrality right now.
We shouldn't be condemning Israel, should we not?
Oh no, of course we should.
But that's not neutral.
Well, we are militarily neutral, but politically...
We're absolutely interventionist. I just idea we're neutral.
We're not politically neutral, but we're militarily neutral. Yeah, no, I'd have to, been clear.
Sort of voicing your concerns about what's happening in a country is not a breach of neutrality. It's when you militarily intervene in a country, it's a very clear breach of neutrality. I would agree with Niamh also with regard to the slippage that's happening. I mean, the Irish Army are engaged in training the Ukrainian forces. The government initially said it would only be minesweeping, but now it's going on to training in using weapons. I mean, given that those soldiers are at war, I mean, that is very close to participation in a war. The constitution is very clear that the government should back
that. Did you have any issue with us providing mine clearing equipment to the Ukrainian army or medical supplies?
Not medical supplies. No. I mean, nothing humanitarian.
Shouldn't we have supplied medical supplies to the Russian army? Michael, the answer is obviously no, and people can tell that you're just desperately trying not to say no. The answer is no, and that means we're not neutral. We're utterly not. If we were neutral, we would be giving bandages to Russians as quickly as we'd be giving them to the Ukrainians. I wish people would just accept this reality.
Well, I mean,
talking about neutrality.
People often talk about Shannon Airport and say that we're not neutral because American troops pass through it. I mean, we should bear in mind that Russian troops pass through Shannon Airport, have passed through Shannon Airport in the past. Turkish troops pass through Shannon Airport. So, I mean, it is important to maintain a level playing field. I mean, if a Russian aeroplane came down in Ireland and somebody was injured, would they be treated in our hospital? Of course they would. You know what I mean? I think we have to be very realistic about what's humanitarian and what's military intervention, and they're two different things. Mine clearing is humanitarian. Medical supplies are humanitarian. They're there to keep people alive. Training people to use weapons is not humanitarian,
and so
in my view.
Would you like us then to retreat, retreat from these European battle groups that we've committed Irish soldiers to? And to renege on our commitments with NATO? We're not a member of NATO, of course, and there's absolutely no appetite publicly for NATO membership. But we are involved in this partnership for peace. We're kind of tangential to NATO.
Well, and I heard the government make the point recently that that it was going to make our territorial waters safer if there was closer integration, closer cooperation. The subsea cables are constantly cited. The reality is, if any country in the world wants to cut the subsea cables between here and the United States, they will be able to do so if they choose to do so. I mean, just as the fact that Denmark was in NATO did not in any way prevent Nord Stream being blown up in its territorial waters by whoever blew it up.
I think the key issue, Kieran, is that I think where people criticise our neutrality is because they feel it's not a credible neutrality because we can't defend ourselves. But if you talk to people in the defence forces, they would say our focus is completely wrong. It should not be on defence. It should be on security. We've invested nothing in our armed forces in the last 10 years. We've invested almost nothing in our security. We've had a national security policy that's been out for consultation since 2019 and it's been sitting on a shelf somewhere and people have done nothing about it. It's not a credible neutrality.
Cynthia?
Except that the government has pledged and the figures are out there for the forward planning for extra resources for defence. And I think it's kind of scaremongering on the part of Michael to be saying that we're moving close, and Niamh to say that we're moving closer to this kind of towards NATO, towards joining all of that. What you said was you're very concerned about
what has been funded. We have got rid of this triple lock, Cynthia, without any mandate or any real consultation.
I'm sorry, how have we gotten rid of it when it actually hasn't happened yet? There's been talks about it, but it hasn't actually happened. And of course, there are some academics out there who believe that it may require a referendum. So
I think that's the critical point.
Let me finish.
I think the movement without a referendum is problematic.
Could I just finish my point about the military spend? So Micheál Martin, as Taoiseach and as Minister for Defence, is keenly aware of the need to protect not only our shores and our borders, but also our waters. And there is a government pledge for spending in the defence area. Could I just say, in relation to defence and neutrality, which are centrally important issues, and I fully accept that, but the issues on the doorstep for the voters are actually housing and inward investment in the regions. And could I say, in relation to housing, Niamh has said that she wants to, housing as one of her main platforms, but how is she going to actually access funding from the EU? She hasn't told us this, but I can tell you how I'll do it.
Well, I can tell you, I will Cynthia. Have a
look. Well, let Cynthia tell me how she'll do it, yeah. And then yeah. You tell me how you'll do it.
I'll tell you, I would look at the European Investment Bank, and last year they pledged funding for student accommodation. It's going to be matched by the state. That moves students out of units to move people into for rent. There are other aspects of the European Investment Bank that can be exhausted and investigated with regards to funding social housing and with regards to funding retrofitting. And there are also the Just Transition Fund, whereby all empty units above retail units in the likes of Kilkenny or Carlow or Tipperary Town, that they could be renovated. And that funding could be used for the social transition.
Why hasn't it been done now, Cynthia? Like, they've all been in government since 2019.
Dara O'Brien has been working from a standstill since 2020.
The country is full. Ireland South.
I'll just give you some figures. We built 33,000 houses last year. That was an up of 10% on the previous year. And to date, we have built close to 30,000 in the first
but
4 months of this year. So
Michael,
a lot done,
Mike,
more to
yeah,
do.
Michael.
I mean, but I can tell you,
that's
Dara
Bertie
O'Brien,
Ahern's catchphrase Dara, from 2007.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what it is. We have a lot more to do, but I can tell you, in Ireland
but
South, the statistic
enough,
is 15,000 social housing units were built.
Sorry, Michael. This over commercial units scheme, I mean, the government brought in Croí Cónaithe. It's welcome, but it's not enough. It's not working. It's
exactly,
overly bureaucratic.
That's why I suggested it's not. It's not. Involved.
And I've raised it consistently, the fact that it's overly bureaucratic. It was 297 grants were drawn down. I mean, that is a drop in the ocean compared to what's needed. If you pass through any market town in Ireland South, it's full of buildings that are vacant over ground floor level.
And so
where families were living in.
Let
families were living in them.
But he hasn't got
to
a solution.
No, I do. It is simply,
what is it?
You will have to bring in a pilot project. You need to change the fire regulations. That's a large part of the problem.
It's
prohibitively. What can you? Well, I think you can look.
You
can look at.
You
can. Sorry, I mean, if I'm asked a question, I'd like to be able to answer it. In Europe, what you can do is argue for more money from the Green Deal to be put into actually paying people up front, because a lot of people can't borrow the amount of money that it takes to renovate these properties, and then wait to see if they're going to get the grant or not. And many people are not getting the grant because of the onerous restrictions that are in place on the grant,
and
they find themselves in a 70,000 euro hole in their budget as a result. Notwithstanding
there be a housing fund.
Dermot Bannon's, promotion of Dara O'Brien and that scheme, which is in fact not working on the ground.
Dermot Bannon is not here to defend himself.
He doesn't won't be in the EU. If I get elected, I will be suggesting that one of the key funds beyond Horizon and Erasmus and the Just Transition, and these are large funds, that there be a separate European fund to sort out the housing crisis, not in Ireland, but throughout Europe.
How are you going to get the EU to shift to housing as a European competence?
I am going to advocate. I've been advocating and arguing all my life.
The single biggest thing, Cynthia, that you could do for the European housing market is to get the European Union to create anti-speculation policies against investment funds, which have absolutely
that won't solve
ravaged.
The problem,
they
Niamh,
have
I'm
tripled.
Afraid.
They have tripled their gobbling up of European housing stock in the 10 years, and
itty-bitty
measures. Like you've just said, you've just talked about what Fianna Fáil have done since being in government. That's only a fraction of what's needed. So many of the schemes, if you were instance, take one of the renovation housing schemes, somebody would effectively have to give up their own house to renovate some of the houses in those schemes. So many of those schemes have been set up to fail. And at the end of the day, Cynthia, they have not set any boundaries with vulture funds or any of the market forces that have created the housing market.
The vulture fund is only one aspect, which obviously me, being a member of the Labour Party, would be pushing on that. But think about the buy-to-let that we have already introduced. Think about the help-to-buy scheme. Think about the tax-free allowance that is there for renters.
For those schemes, Cynthia?
Yes, I've looked at the figures. But, Niamh, it can't all be wrong. If I canvassed in Ireland South, I must be the hardest canvassing candidate out there, because I've canvassed in each of the counties and I have gone and visited social and affordable housing estates in each of them.
Have you looked at the housing lists in each of those
yes,
counties?
Yes, and
they're growing.
I have
they're
just said,
smaller,
Michael and Niamh, it's not enough.
70,000
but there's a lot
on
done.
The housing list in Ireland.
And Kieran,
it's,
much
it's
not,
great to visit people who are already in, but what about everyone else?
And if I had a euro for every time somebody talked about a scheme that was going to get people to live over the shops, Michael Smith was minister in 94 when the first lot scheme was announced, and still people don't want to do it. And it's partly, as you say, it's bureaucracy and difficulties, all that. People don't want to live in the middle
planning.
Of town a lot of the time.
That,
because
well,
actually, because actually, some people do, but too. Actually, it's amenities as well. Yep. It's green. You talk about a market town. If you want to live in the middle of Thurles, all you're looking out on is roads and car parks.
I think
there's no parks, there's no playgrounds. Why would a family live there?
I would agree with you. There was a time when people didn't want to live in the middle of towns.
They do now.
I do accept that. But more and more people are happy now, particularly younger couples and older couples are happy to live in the middle of towns in smaller units. And we need to provide those units for them. And if people, I mean, obviously the fire eggs are an obstacle. Nobody's suggesting that they don't have to be safe. They do. But if people can live safely over medieval in four-storey medieval buildings in Paris or Prague, they can live safely in Tip Town or Carrigashuer or Take Your Pick.
How difficult is it? I know this is kind of getting into the political anorak territory, but I mean, it's a massive constituency.
It's a monster.
I mean, kind
it's
of
a beast.
Bray to the Beira Peninsula.
Yeah. You know, Bannistrand.
Yeah, okay, yeah, whatever other B everybody has
all
decided to
yeah.
pick on. I think, what did they say? Kildare to Killybegs, maybe the other direction. It's monstrous. It's absolutely monstrous. I mean, is it? You can't go door to door knocking on all 800 plus thousand people's doors. You've got to get the message out there. I mean, how common are the issues across the constituency?
I have to say, I think there is very clear evidence of a rural-urban divide, particularly on that climate-agriculture nexus.
Yeah.
It's something I'd be very concerned about, because I think we have seen the far right exploit what is in many ways quite the legitimate alienation of farmers from the EU. And I think that's something that's concerning. Migration is a massive issue on the doors, and housing. I mean, those are probably the three issues. I mean, I'm fortunate, I suppose, with the Labour Party. I've been out with our councillors on the ground and I have done a certain amount of door knocking. There has been a very positive reception. But one of the things I think, Kieran, it's important to recognise, and I'd say it to people listening today, please make sure and find out what constituency you're in, who's representing you right now and who's running, because a lot of people actually aren't sure. And it's part of the democratic deficit and why people don't think Europe matters. And it really does.
Michael?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously in the Midwest, health is also a major issue because of the inadequate funding and management of UHL, which is a major issue. But there is a palpable fear among farmers right across the constituency. I was at Kilkenny Mart today, and it's exactly the same stories you hear at Ennismart at the other side of the constituency.
And is there that divide that Niamh talks about as well? Do you see that divide?
I think farmers feel that they're being targeted by environmentalists. Not people aren't proposing measures that will help them, they're actually being targeted, and they're
all stake no carrot type thing.
Yeah, and they're being it's being put out there that they're almost like the sole cause of the climate crisis, and that they will bear the brunt of whatever measures are put in place
Cynthia,
in Ireland.
Farmers, you want to jump in?
Farmers are being vilified and they're being demonised, and they feel that. But in actual fact, when you look at what is happening to them, first of all, their cap payment has not increased with the cost of living, with inflation, and it now contains green payments in it. So the first thing is, the cap that I spoke to with a farmer about yesterday down in Ballyragget in Kilkenny, she said to me, she's in her 60s, she said, I'm getting the same cap, she said, as my father got. And that's 40 years ago. So the cap has moved away from the security of food and from the provision of food. Number two, the red tape is absolutely choking farmers. And the same farmer and other farmers throughout Tipperary have told me, and indeed in Camolin in North Wexford, that they go in every night after they've milked the cows or whatever they've done, and they go in and they just fill out forms for the next 2 hours. So when I get, and if and when I win a seat, when I get to Brussels, I will look at each and every piece of green scheme and initiative and directive for farmers and ensure that it is not overladen with red tape. And the other thing is, for farmers, they don't feel that they're getting recognition for the active initiatives that they're taking for sequestration of carbon and reduction of carbon, and they're not getting paid. So any green schemes will have to be paid. Did you look at the farmer last night that it was on the 6-1 News. He's a neighbour of mine. He's from Benicarry. His name is George Byrne. He put 44 panels of solar panels on his roof, and he's not going to get the benefit for the carbon reduction. Yeah. And who is? Bord Gáis gets it instead.
You said you visited every constituency. You've nearly named every constituency.
Yeah, I have visited.
I'm every county
can I just
in the
say, as a result,
as well.
I meet voters now in the street, and do you know what they say to me? They say, we haven't met another candidate. You're the first. And we haven't met another. And they're still saying I'm the first this week.
I heard the same thing, but maybe that's because it's such a vast constituency.
Yeah,
I mean, let's
so.
Be let's
I've been
be
to Clare
honest,
five times, but I haven't met Michael yet on the hustings.
Well, you didn't.
That frustration.
Sorry, Cynthia. What hustings did you not meet me at in Clare?
On the street, on the hustings.
Well, I mean, I'm very
villages.
Sorry. I'm very sorry that I wasn't walking down the same street as you were at the same time. We can go to the Cliffs. We can go to the Cliffs of Moher together. After the election,
if people take anything from this, it's that there's more than one street in County Clare.
I know all
Niamh
of
does
them,
that. Niamh does that. Does that frustration breed apathy amongst some of the voters?
Funny enough, I think it affects different groups different ways. Farmers are very engaged. They're very exercised with Europe. They're very well informed and they do vote. I think what is more worrying is there's actually a lot more urban apathy, or perhaps in the suburbs. Mm. I think also, not necessarily the very young, because I think they're so climate aware, but perhaps the next generation over saying, well, the EU, what does it matter to me? And again, it's that piece about perhaps a disconnect where they don't really understand the proportion of legislation that actually originates in the EU.
I'm not getting that. When I start talking about the protection of women from all forms of violence, I don't get that apathy. They're fully engaged with me when I explain that I want to include rape and put that back into that directive, which was
I think
the
they're unclear,
minute.
Cynthia, about what the EU can do
and
about
not
those issues.
Well, not,
how much engagement is there on the door
protecting their children from
with
the
what you might
giants.
Describe as genuinely European issues?
I think there's, I mean, well, it depends on what a genuinely European issue.
I mean, migration
is becoming a genuinely European issue. And
I mean,
also,
if somebody says, you know, we need more nurses in UHL, like, I'm not dismissing that as an importance, but it's not a genuinely European issue in the, you know, in terms of what you can affect.
Yeah, I do. But I mean, I think that more and more issues are genuinely European issues.
Sorry,
I mean, there's a huge,
engagement. To work in the hospitals.
There's a huge engagement on migration. I think people are aware that it's going to be regulated increasingly at a European level, and also that the European Union has to do a lot more to address the root causes, the inequalities that people are fleeing from, the conflicts that people are fleeing from.
Laura,
and the European Union hasn't used its position as much as it can.
Paul Gavin from Sinn Féin, John Mullins from Fine Gael, Lorna Bogue, Rowther Gloss are going to be with me a little bit later. In the meantime, thank you to Cynthia Iveracu, who is a Fianna Fáil candidate, Niamh Horrigan, who is a Labour candidate, and Michael McNamara, independent candidate, all running in the Ireland South constituency. We want to talk about something that is happening in early June, the 7th of June, the European elections. Paul Gavin is with me. He is a Sinn Féin senator and he is hoping to be an MEP in Ireland South. John Mullins, hoping for the same. He's a candidate for Fine Gael. And Lorna Bogue, she too a candidate for Rowerth Glas. You're all very, very welcome. Thanks a million for joining us. Lorna, why do you want to be an MEP? What do you want to do in Brussels?
Well, first of all, we actually are registered under Rowerth and our tagline is the Party for Workers and Carers. Don't worry, I've been repeating this all the way out. Yeah. Green is quite toxic right now. I'm running because I want to shake up politics in Ireland. People are under a lot of pressure in their workplaces, communities and homes. None of the government or main opposition parties have any intention of making the changes in the economy that are needed to address the housing crisis, the cost of living or the climate crisis. So as an MEP, I want to offer a political platform to 2 million people from the southeast to Cork and Limerick. And with a mandate like that, I think I can do something that councillors and TDs currently can't do, which is put the government under pressure on any topic.
And why Brussels then more so than Runford the Dáil? There's going to be a Dáil election in, you know, 10 months' time. At the latest, 9 months, 8 months, 6 months, who knows? But I mean, if you want to put the government under pressure, is that not the place to do it?
I don't necessarily think that it is. So I'm a sitting Cork City Councillor. I've been trying to use my position there to put workers' and carers' voices at the centre of what we're doing in local government. I'm finding that my hands are often tied by what the central government is doing. And I look at debates that are happening in the Dáil and in the Shannon, and it's very difficult to get anything across the line there. So, no, I think the important thing for me there is actually the mandate. Having a mandate that where you are beholden to 2 million people and can speak to 2 million people, that's the important thing to me. And that's why I've been canvassing for the last 3 years now at this point.
John Mullins, hoping to be an MEP for Fine Gael. John, I know you're on your way to Bruce Springsteen, so we appreciate you popping into the studio. Why do you want to be an MEP? What are you going to do in Brussels if elected?
Well, first off, I had a political background in college when I was president of Young Fine Gael, and people like Pascal Donoghue were in the executive at the time. I am a first-time candidate. I spent 34 years in business and in civic society and charitable work. I'm also a director of Páirc Uí Chaoimh, as it happens. I have a history of negotiation across all of Europe. I'm an entrepreneur. I set up a business here in 2013 when I left my role as Chief Executive of Bord Gáis, and there are now 250 people working in that business across Europe. I've set up offices in Vienna, Paris, Madrid, and we have an office here in Cork where we have 40 people employed. We've delivered solar farms up to about €1 billion. So I probably have done more for climate change in Europe than most of the candidates.
That's the bio done. So what are you going to do?
Well, what I'm going to do is
it?
So I mean, I understand how to do politics because clearly I've been dealing with politics right across Europe, dealing with Austrian mayors and French prefects, etc. You know, I've clearly been involved in policy matters in the context of energy in Ireland, energy security. In terms of what I want to do in Europe, clearly there are a number of things that are really standing out. You know, Europe matters because it covers about 70% of all that we legislate here in Ireland. We have real issues in agriculture and fisheries. The single market, we need more consumer value and customer service in the market. We've only got 2.5 banks here, for example. We need more banks in this country. And I'd like to be in Europe, by the way, assisting new industries like, for example, offshore wind, which has got a great opportunity to create jobs in Wicklow, Wexford, Waterford, Cork, right across the country. And, you know, we have to look also, by the way, on the thorny issue of migration. Because quite clearly Fine Gael has put its flag up the mast in the context of the Migration Act. I know others here are against that, but we're quite clearly, we can't do this on our own. We need the support of the European Union. So there's a whole number of issues I want to get involved in, and I have a track record of international negotiation. I believe I'm a right candidate to go to Brussels and represent the people of Ireland.
Paul, what would you do for the people of this constituency? Ireland South, huge constituency. As we said, Bray to the Bear Peninsula earlier. What would you do for them if elected?
Well, my first point would be that we really need to elect Sinn Féin MEPs in Ireland South. Right now, 4 of our 5 MEPs are actually government representatives. And I'm sure many of your listeners at home aren't particularly pleased with this government because they failed so fundamentally in relation to housing, healthcare, the cost of living, and so many more issues. What I want to do, I suppose in contrast to John, I was listening to John carefully there, and he's very much talking about life through the lens of being a CEO. I want to represent ordinary workers, families and communities. That's my background. My background is representing workers through my trade union SIPTU before I was in the Shannon, and I've raised and strongly raised issues of workers' rights, democracy in the workplace, and building decent public services. There's a job of work to be done in Europe because Europe does have a key role in relation to key issues like housing, for example, where the fiscal rules, and this is something I think we really need to discuss this evening, the fiscal rules at the moment, which John's party have supported, allow you to borrow for military purposes, but not to build housing. Now, those aren't the values that I want to bring to European Union, and we're at a crucial election. This election will determine whether the European Union heads in one direction, a more centralised, militarised Europe, or whether we head towards back towards a social Europe, the sort of Europe that really touches people and transforms their lives in a positive way.
I mean, is it your contention that we would be building more houses if those rules were different?
Oh, absolutely.
But we don't have a shortage of money.
I can't agree.
Paul, we have £8 billion sitting in rainy day funds.
Yes.
I mean, we could be building much more houses if it was just a question of money.
Well, first of all, I agree with you. And let's be clear, this government has failed horrendously in terms of housing. 14,000 homeless. And right now, 7 out of 10 children between, 7 out of 10 adults between the ages of 18 and 34 are still living with their parents. That is a shocking indictment of Fine Gael policy over 13 years. But the European Union does
but,
have...
But what I get back to there is that, that this is a criticism then of government policy rather than fiscal rules in Europe, isn't it? Because if those fiscal rules were changed, if government policy didn't change, there still would be no more houses because, like I say, they had so much spare money, the last budget, they set up two rainy day funds.
So your point about the fact that we need change at government level as well as European, I agree with you 100%, Kieran. Okay, but okay. My point is that the fiscal rules as set up do not favour investment in public services, in key issues like housing, and we need to change
John.
It.
Well, Paul, you know, Sinn Féin has got a very good track record on Europe. You voted against every referendum, actually. Lisbon Treaty, fiscal rules, right across the board. Nice 1, Nice 2. The reality is that Brussels is not going to build houses in this country. The reality about the fiscal rules is that it's actually put a discipline on actually how we spend money in this country, which is something that Sinn Féin, in my view, is going to have a difficulty with if you do get into government
unless
in this country.
Unless you're spending on military.
And there's no shortage of money.
Military's fine.
There's no shortage of money, Paul. There's no shortage of money available for housing. And in fact, if you look at the number of commencements, there have been 350 unit commencements per day in this country. It is a record. If you look at the curve between January and April of this year, we're now at a commencement level of about 30,000 units of houses and or apartments. It is a significant uplift. And you might have heard my colleague, Michael O'Flynn, who's on the board of Páirc Cliath, state the other day, we now have a capacity for around 50,000 units a year. And the trend is moving upwards. So we will get supply in touch with demand. And that's a critical piece in the context of the price of houses. And we are seeing, by the way, we are seeing 450 young couples
every
week, 450 young couples are picking up house keys every single week.
What do you have to say about the 500 empty homes right now? Public council
homes in Cork, mortgage drawdowns
empty houses
as well,
in the middle of the biggest housing crisis in history.
Lorna, is this an issue that keeps coming up? I know, I was going to say on the doorsteps, there's 800 odd thousand houses, I think, in the constituency. It's slightly different from local or even kind of general elections. You're not knocking on all those doors, but you are speaking to voters. Is it housing?
I can't get to every door, as I'm sure no one in this election can, but I have, because I am a councillor, made a huge effort actually to get to everyone in the constituency that I can. So I have knocked on tens of thousands of doors over the past 3 years, because that is how you win elections. It is shoe leather. Kieran, this election is boring. It's an extremely boring election because...
don't say that. We've 10 Kieran, minutes to
I'm,
go.
I'm running in it and I find it boring because there is a mood in the public at the moment that I am seeing. It's beyond anger. It's fed up. People are fed up. And the unfortunate thing about this election is that we are being presented with candidates from government parties who are not particularly serious candidates. So John here, no harm to you, John. It's your first time running and, you know, it's a more painful experience than anything else, your first time. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, like, you know, you are not speaking to people's concerns. You're repeating lines that you're receiving from the government and people are very angry at the government and they're not actually able to vocalise what is the problem that they are having right now. And that is housing and it's health and it's basic services. There's carers all across the constituency who are telling me before that vote came in, which was the biggest landslide defeat of the government in the history of referendums in this state. And they have nobody to actually seriously challenge or hold to account for the actions of this
government.
And
do you think that's going to manifest in the European elections then as what? Government parties getting a trouncing?
I think it's going to be government parties getting a trouncing, but I also think that's what happened in the last referendum, both of them.
Tell you the answer.
I mean, he's right. The polls today had government parties at about 47%. Right. They're almost back up at kind of forming government territory.
I think people answer differently in polls. And the only, I know it's a cliche, but the only poll is actually on election day, right? So, you know, I think that people are very angry at the government. I think they're fed up. John, if you don't think people are angry,
I'm going to door to door as much as you are. And frankly, I'm not getting that type of response.
So the conversations I'm hearing on the doors are conversations actually my adult children are having with me. They're saying to me that they can't see a future in this country because they can't afford to rent, never mind save to buy. And all too often I'm meeting people whose children are now in Australia or in the States. And genuinely, John, because you're a nice man, but I don't think you understand the extent of the housing crisis. You hear rattling off figures.
Well, you would if you were 7 out of 10
adult children living with their parents into their 30s. The comparison of Finland is 1 in 20. There's something gone fundamentally wrong in terms of housing and in terms of health. Don't forget, I come from Limerick, where UHL has been in constant crisis. When John's party came to power, 3,500 people on trolleys.
What are you going to
last
do?
Last year, 21,000 people
on trolleys.
How are you
as an MEP going to fix this? How are you as an MEP? You're in the Oireachtas at the moment, by the way. Is it not better that you stay in the Oireachtas, actually, stay on committees domestically and actually continue to argue the points you're making, rather than going all the way to Brussels, where you will be ineffectual with respect to these issues?
I really welcome your support for me to stay in the Shannon, John. It's very generous of you. But in actual fact, again, the EU sets the agenda. Let's not forget, it was only a few years ago that the EU was insisting on cuts in terms of privatisation and horrendous cutbacks in our health service that we still haven't recovered from. There's also really good opportunities for research through Horizon in terms of health. But here again, John's party, Fine Gael, members of the EPP, you're seeing a big drive now to change that funding to include military funding.
Yeah, that's ironic, actually, because Sinn Féin voted against Horizon 2020. In the last European Parliament. I find that really ironic.
No, we just wanted more funding.
No, you wanted more funding. No, you actually voted against the funding that was negotiated. And look, we have an increase in Horizon
Europe
funding.
That's what opposition parties do, John. We vote against the Conservative parties that you want to do. And fundamentally, Europe hasn't been working for people at home here for the last number of years.
I don't accept
It's lost
that.
Its focus. It's heading more towards militarisation. And that militarisation agenda is led by the EPP, John's group.
I can bring it up, and that
threatens our neutrality.
I can bring it up the road, Paul, where I served as 10 years in the Tyndall Institute, where there's 450 PhD and master students on deep tech. And now they're doubling that, by the way. Why? Because European Union is actually giving more money to deep tech research. And that's the impact, by the way, of Europe in Cork, right across the Ireland South. And you're seeing it across all of the other universities as well. I know this because I've been right in the middle of it for the last 20 years.
Yes, but in fairness, again, you're coming at this from a very much a top-down. And fair play, as I say, you've had tremendous success, and I recognise that, John.
Thank you,
but
Bob.
I don't think you're going to appreciate the perspective of working people, communities and families.
If Lorna is hearing kind of frustration with the government and the Doors, and if Paul is hearing that at the Doors, and he says hearing at home kind of frustration with kind of housing issues, what are you hearing?
Well, look, I'm hearing different things coming out. So people are actually complaining about the echo chamber on migration, for example. They believe, you know, some of the big issues coming up are actually domestic. You know, things around respite care. I've had this on a number of occasions, which quite clearly we're looking for resources. There is no shortage of money being pumped into a whole number of things. And if we went down the route of economic management that Paul is promoting, we'd have no money for welfare. We'd have no money for healthcare, because all you want to do is break the fiscal rules, by the way, and spend, spend, spend.
Boys.
It's interesting that John brings up the echo chamber on migration, you know, hearing it on the Doors, all of this. There is a very real thing that is happening that your party and government has done, John. So your job is actually to defend what your party and government has done. 27,000 people this week, Ukrainian refugees, are having their income cut down from the previous level to about 37-8 euros a week. So John wants to be strong on migration. He is interested in welfare, and he is interested in not having a echo chamber type debate about migration. But at the end of the day, you know, what Fine Gael have done is that they have whipped up fear around immigration to distract from the massive failures of government on housing, health, climate and everything else. And now Simon Harris, your party leader, in order to shore up his leadership of this country, has gone after the incomes of women and children.
By the way, this was well flagged.
Simon Harris, big man. But he is going, once again...
The opposition party, I believe, are in favour of this as well, Paul, because I've heard some of your commentators saying that actually you're in favour of the movement.
I am not in favour of any of that.
Now, just to be clear, one fundamental difference. We do recognise that because the temporary protection is going to come to an end next March, that rates do need to change. But we have made it clear it should be a much longer tapering period. What's happening in terms of this three-month period is far too short and it is unfair.
Yeah, but the people are still actually in accommodation. if you're actually on unemployment benefit, paying rent in a council house, for example, you don't get the benefits that
these people are getting. Not that many people are in council houses, John. Sorry, we have a waiting list of 13 years.
I grew up in a council house.
Cork City Council of 13 years to get a house.
Not everybody is in a council house. Next to me who actually were unemployed and had to pay all their bills.
I
think the vast majority of people, in my view, by the way, are in favour of the reduction of the allowances. And by the way, they benchmark across European Union.
But it should be tapered over a longer time.
It's been tapered over 3 months, and that's sufficient period.
I don't think it is, but the key point is that you haven't acknowledged the failure over 13 years of Fine Gael and housing. We have the biggest housing crisis in the history of the state, and you haven't acknowledged it.
We've actually got historic levels of commencements in the last 4 months.
We don't need to bombard people with housing numbers again. Lorna, you were going to jump in there.
Well, it's just that...
Don't bombard us with housing numbers.
I won't. I won't because that's my everyday job, so I get enough of it at work. But the reality is, and I'm surprised that Sinn Féin has gone this way, but leaving that aside, the answer that Fine Gael is presenting to this boring election, where we're all focusing on an issue like migration as opposed to the everyday lives of workers and carers in this country, of which migrants into this country are a vital part. You know, Fine Gael's answer to everything, basically, is going after carers, women, people with disabilities. And their answer to the rise of the far right now is to brutalise those people again.
We put more money in than any government in the history of the state in all of those aspects.
And you failed.
No, we have
you
not
failed in health, you failed in housing, and you failed in the cost of living.
Well, of course
you failed in health. I've come to Limerick, come to UHL, you'll see for yourself.
Paul Gavin is a Sinn Féin senator. He is hoping to be a Sinn Féin MEP in Ireland South. John Mullins is a candidate for Fine Gael in the same elections. Lorna Bogue is the leader of Rowertha and hoping to be a Rowertha MEP come the 8th of June. Thank you all very much for joining me here on the show.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.